This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ihayes Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Most likely Italy, but in the overcrowded and quite unworthy vessel they were in without any precautions, such as life jackets, they didn't make it. And unfortunately, it's another large-scale disaster.
That was Kathleen Mace of the Norwegian Refugee Council on the capsizing of a migrant boat off the coast of Greece. Details coming up. Also, more than 100 people are dead after a boat capsized in Nigeria. And refugees of Sudan's conflict who fled to Chad may lose aid when the rainy season begins. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The international medical aid group Doctors Without Borders, MSF, says thousands of people fleeing conflict in Sudan and seeking safety in Chad's eastern border provinces may lose access to vital humanitarian and medical aid when the impending rainy season begins. More than 100,000 people have already crossed the border into Chad since the start of the fighting in Sudan. In a statement this week, MSF says humanitarian aid and funding must be increased urgently to support everyone in the eastern border regions, including refugees from Sudan and local communities who will be cut off from all assistance during the rainy season. Prince Alfani is MSF health advisor for the region. He tells VOA's Douglas Mpuga that more support is needed, especially for refugees in eastern Chad.
The entire support and services and operation that is running to support 1,000 refugees that are crossing painfully the border to come to Chad as really hampered by the access to that area due to the start of the rainy season. As you said, and the temporary rivers that are created that they call in Chad wadis that really do not allow us with our 4x4 to cross and continue to provide that assistance to those refugees that are around the border between Chad and Sudan.
Now, without your help, how prepared is Chad to welcome and support these refugees from Sudan? Does that country have the wherewithal?
Well, I did not have any discussion to know what is the capacity of the Chadian government, but of course they're doing all they can to be able to assist the refugees that are coming. One of the reasons why we are alongside the Minister of Health are supporting them is because there is a limitation to what they can provide when you look at the scope and the extent of the scale of and the number of refugees that are crossing and the need that they have when coming to Chad. Let's not forget that Chad is one of the countries that is hosting a large number of refugees already, and the capacity to support already the existing refugee is already exhausted. So when you add the one that are coming, which is expected, according to UNHCR, up to 200,000 refugees that might cross the border. It's just another overwhelmed situation to the existing already bad situation of the existing refugees that they have already in country. But also, let's not forget the host community that also are also going through some difficult situation.
Eastern Chad has poor access to clean water and sanitation services. The coming rainy season, will it make matters worse, do you think?
Let's say the Chad in general, and more particularly the Eastern Chad, that is really being impacted by the climate changes. And water is one of them. Already, access to potable water has been limited in that part of the country. And with the rainy season coming and the wadi, that might indeed have another impact to access to potable water. And the only, for the moment, place where people are a refugee, including some of the community, are now supporting themselves to get some water is with those temporary rivers. which the water is found to be portable currently.
Given that situation, are there enough resources, humanitarian aid, for instance, and funding to handle the situation when the rainy season kicks in?
MSF is one of the medical organizations that are really on the front line to provide the assistance to the population on the limit of capacity, especially when it comes to healthcare. As I said earlier, already within the country, the existing humanitarian response plan has been underfunded. And when you add, again, the need for the expected total of 200,000 refugees that might cross the border and pick refugee in car, it again puts a pressure on the limited resources that exist already in the country. Hence, one of our main points to call for more support to the refugee, especially the one that are in east of Chad.
That's Prince Alfani, MSF Health Advisor. He spoke with Douglas Mpuga from Berlin, Germany. The Greek Shipping Ministry says at least 78 people drowned today in the Aegean Sea after a large fishing vessel carrying migrants sank off the southern coast of Greece. The ministry says the death toll is likely to rise. Greek authorities say at least 100 people were rescued. Kathleen May, a spokesperson with the Norwegian Refugee Council in Tunisia, calls it the latest tragic incident in which people are trying to flee an unsafe environment to a better location.
What it looks like is that people leaving from Libya, mainly Egyptians, Syrians and Pakistanis, were trying to get to Europe, most likely Italy, but in the overcrowded and quite unworthy vessel they were in without any precautions, such as life jackets, they didn't make it. And unfortunately, it's another large-scale disaster.
Was the NRC involved at all with trying to help? I know that the International Rescue Committee was there.
So we are not directly involved in rescue operations or at disembarkation sites, so when people are returned back to Libya or other countries. However, we do have extensive humanitarian programming in Libya and activities relating to the protection of people on the move, so migrants, refugees or asylum seekers in Tunisia and Egypt.
It's probably too early to say, but is there a chance that some of these migrants may have originated from Africa?
Most likely, I think on a boat with that large amount of people, there will be quite a lot of nationalities. However, what is worrying is that, again, we are seeing quite a lot of Egyptians trying to cross, which might be related to the economic crisis in Egypt, but might also be related to the large arrest operations that have been taking place in Libya. So people most likely did not feel safe in Libya anymore and then took an even more dangerous and deadly option.
What's your best advice for people who feel, you know, that they have very little latitude at home in their home countries and therefore they undertake these dangerous journeys?
I think our best advice is definitely everybody is free to move and look for a better future elsewhere, which is what most of these people are doing. They are fleeing conflict, they are fleeing economic crisis, they are fearing for their personal safety in many cases, but it's to be well informed and to be well informed all along the way. What are their rights? What are the safest options for them to move? How can they access services? Because this is something we see very often, that people have very limited knowledge about the legal procedures they can actually take to migrate regularly. What are the options that are available? For example, talent exchanges, labor exchanges, educational exchanges. So I think this is definitely a thing that we would recommend.
That's Kathleen Mays, a spokesperson with the Norwegian Refugee Council in Tunis, Tunisia. She was speaking with VOA's Carol Van Dam. Three European leaders have promised Tunisia more than $1 billion in financial aid to rescue its deteriorating economy in a collective effort to stem immigration from its shores to Europe. But a Tunisian rights group labeled the proposed aid package as blackmail to close Europe's doors to needy migrants. Mohamed El-Shenawi brings us the story prepared by Noura Hafda in Tunisia.
Dutch Prime Minister Mark Rutte, Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni, and European Commissioner President Ursula von der Leyen proposed a program worth just over $1 billion to help Tunisia restore its battered economy and rescue state finances. The plan includes more than $100 million for Tunisian border and anti-smuggling operations. After their meeting with Tunisian officials on Sunday, von der Leyen said the European Union and Tunisia have a shared interest in halting human traffickers. Tunisia's presidential office said it was creating a partnership with the European Union to combat illegal migration, but President Kais Saied also said it's not acceptable to settle migrants in exchange for money. Von der Leyen said the European border aid is rooted in respect for human rights. However, the Tunisian Forum for Economic and Social Rights expressed concern that the visit and the aid plan concealed blackmail and is an attempt to offer money in exchange for Tunisia becoming a border policeman. Ramadan Ben Amour is the spokesperson for the forum. The European Union, especially Italy, which is now leading a public alliance with the Tunisian government, is working with Tunisia to shut down the migrant route from Tunisia using intensive pressure to tightly control migrant flow, even if that means violating their human rights. The European team also urged President Saied to agree to the terms of a $1.9 billion International Monetary Fund bailout. Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni, who has pressed for the IMF to relax conditions for its loan program, said there was an important window of opportunity to finalize the aid agreement before the European Council's meeting at the end of June.
We must all continue to work hard to achieve a memorandum between Europe and Tunisia that can lay the foundation of a new page in the history between Europe and Tunisia.
European donors say time is almost up for Tunisia to agree to the IMF loan and avert a collapse in its state finances. The IMF, however, is unwilling to provide the money without assurance Tunisia will follow the needed reforms to repay its debts. Mohammed Al-Shinawi for Nour Hafayd in Tunis.
You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. It's been a year since armed men in Nigeria's southwest Ondo state rushed into St. Francis Xavier Catholic Church during a mass and attacked worshippers, killing 41 people and injuring scores of others. Nigerian officials and the Catholic diocese held a memorial service and dedicated a park to honor the memory of the victims. Timothy Obiezu has the latest from Owo, 1 year on.
A facelift for an auditorium once stained with blood. 41 worshippers ruthlessly killed on June 5th of 2022 when gunmen opened fire and detonated explosives inside St. Francis Xavier Catholic Church in Owo, Nigeria. 87 people were severely injured, including Margaret Atta, who lost both legs when a bomb exploded next to her.
It's noisy because since then, if I hear any sound, any strange sound, oh, my mind will just jump. Whenever I just flash back to that very day, my mind will just say, I cannot go.
Nigerian authorities say it was the first attack in southwest Nigeria linked to a terror group. Officials say it was carried out by the Islamic State West Africa province, or ISWAP. Over the weekend, the Catholic Church Diocese and Ondo State authorities held a memorial service to honor the dead and show support for the survivors. They also dedicated a park in memory of the victims. Ondo Deputy State Governor Lucky Ayedatiwa spoke about the government's investigation.
I want to announce to you that some of the culprits have been arrested, and the investigation has gone very far. such attack will never happen again.
The victims' families and survivors like Esther Okundalaye say the memories of that day are still fresh and changed them forever.
One thing this has taught us is to be self-conscious and to be self-aware of ourselves, because if you see a strange face in the church or a strange person beside you or walking around, you tend to call the attention of the security personnel.
I remember my parents by the love my mother used to show to me, and my dad too, with the encouragement they normally used to give me.
Critics have accused the Nigerian government of not doing enough to secure the country. In late May, Bola Tinubu was sworn in as president, taking the reins from former President Muhammadu Buhari and vowing to make security a top priority. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Owo, Ondo State, Nigeria.
More than 100 people are dead after a boat capsized on the Niger River in northern Nigeria Monday night. Police told reporters late Tuesday the boat was traveling in the western state of Kwara during the pre-dawn hours when the disaster occurred. He said many of the passengers were returning from a wedding ceremony in nearby Niger State. Officials say several children were among the dead. Police spokesman Akasanmi Ajoye said at least 103 were killed in the accident, while 100 people or more have been rescued. Searchers are still looking for more victims. Former U.S. President Donald Trump pleaded not guilty yesterday to federal charges that he broke the law many times by holding on to top-secret documents when he left the White House. It is a historic case that could change the country's political trajectory. Washington Post senior political correspondent Dan Balls tells VOA's Carol Van Damme that so far Trump's defiant stance has helped him cement his place as the Republican frontrunner heading into next year's U.S. presidential race.
He's now got more than a majority of support among Republican voters in the choice of who they want to be their nominee. But having said that, you know, it's the middle of June in 2023. And there's a very long way to go. And we know that these races, you know, always present surprises and ups and downs for candidates. So I think we have to, you know, we have to leave open the possibility that there could be some attrition in his support and strength. But I think at this point, he is so much the central focus of this. And until a Republican or several Republicans figure out a way to persuade the people who still are quite strongly in favor of Donald Trump, he remains the favorite to win the nomination.
Most Republicans, you know, including the high-profile ones, stayed quiet yesterday, refusing to comment on the contents of the indictment. What do you make of that?
I think they still don't know what to do about Trump as a rival. I mean, I think there are two things involved here. One is that most Republican politicians, whatever they truly think about Donald Trump, are basically afraid to express that publicly because they don't want the wrath of the Trump base coming at them and the wrath of Donald Trump. So that's part of it. But for the Republican candidates who are trying to deny him the nomination, it's this kind of false hope that there is a way to be with him and against him. And so they're tentative on this, and it's easier for them either to stay silent or to amplify his argument that this is a weaponized Justice Department, or they can do that and try to curry favor with the Trump voters without attacking him.
We have never seen anything like this before in this country. What was your first reaction to seeing those photos showing boxes and boxes of documents sitting in a chandelier bathroom and other rooms at Mar-a-Lago, his private club in Miami?
Well, I think everybody's reaction was shock that documents like that are just put willy-nilly in, you know, wherever there's a spare space for a pile of boxes. Obviously not not every document in all those in every box is a classified document. We know that, but nonetheless, it's just a kind of a cavalier attitude on the part of Donald Trump that he can do whatever he wants, that, you know, that everything about the presidency was his and he has a right to take it and put it wherever he wants and nobody should question him about it. So, yeah, those photos were shocking.
He's the first former U.S. president to be accused of federal crimes and could be sentenced to prison if found guilty. How do you think the indictment and his appearance in Miami federal court yesterday is being viewed by the rest of the world?
Oh, I think the rest of the world continues to be shocked by the behavior of Donald Trump and, frankly, concerned that he might end up as president of the United States again. I think that's a gathering concern. It has been a concern even after he lost the 2020 election that was not necessarily a definitive statement on his political future. And so I think people overseas see this and are concerned. And I think the other aspect about that is that people look at this and say, you know, the United States is a country that is wrestling with its own demons, that it's an inward-looking country and that it is not as well equipped to lead the world as might be needed at this moment.
That was Washington Post senior political correspondent Dan Balz speaking with VOA's Carol Van Dam.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message, leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni says he no longer has symptoms of COVID-19, although he did test positive on Sunday. In a tweet yesterday, he said that since last Friday, he's been symptom-free and he began working from home doing paperwork on Sunday. In his tweet, Museveni brushed off rumors that he was hospitalized in intensive care and said, other than to sleep, he had not spent time in bed since testing positive for the virus early last week. The 78-year-old Ugandan president, one of the longest-serving national leaders in the world, has said he was vaccinated against the virus and they usually wore a mask in public. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, Nelson Lopes, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station.